Roy Blanton woke up to a throbbing hell. The pain in his left arm seemed unbearable as each beat of his pulse sent a burning spear of flame down his arm to singe his hand, a hand that was no longer there. He tried to sit up, but weakened by the severe loss of blood, he couldn't. Hearing his agonized moans, Doc and Junior got up from the table in the kitchen and went in to see the patient.
Oh, damn you, Garvey. You've damn near killed me.
I told you it was going to be rough. It's going to pain you like hell for a spell, but it'll heal. I've seen a lot of boys recover all right. Saw it all the time during the war. You just need to give it a little time.
Doc glanced at Junior as if to explain to him.
That there hand had to come off. Gangrene was already setting in. If I hadn't have took it off, it would have spread all the way up his arm and you'd have had to take it off at the shoulder. And that's a hell of a lot riskier. He'd have died for sure.
Where's my hand?
In a bucket by the door. I was fixing to throw it to the dogs.
God damn you. I want my hand. Junior, you make sure he don't throw my hand away or I'll shoot both of you.
What do you want your hand for?
You just do like I told you.
All right, Pa.
Junior turned to look at Doc, who answered his gaze with one of amused astonishment.
Whatever you say, you're the paying customer. I'm going to give you a little more medicine right now, maybe take away some of that pain.
Doc got a bottle of whiskey from a shelf near the bed and held it before Roy.
Here, take a pull out of this bottle.
Roy eagerly took the bottle, and with Doc helping him hold it steady, he gulped down a large swallow. Serving as painkiller and anesthesia, whiskey was the only medicine available to Doc Garvey. It had no painkilling properties beyond rendering the patient drunk to the point where he was unaware that he had pain. But it seemed to help Roy once he had drunk half the bottle, because he lapsed into a fretful sleep once again.
He's doing fine. I'll see what I can do with the hand.
Doc stood over the bucket, staring at the purple-gray appendage while he tried to decide what to do with it. After a moment, he went into the back room, emerging a few minutes later with a piece of oil skin.
Maybe this'll do the job.
He wrapped the hand in it. He held it out to Junior, but Junior backed away from it as if it were a living thing.
I put it in the shed out back for now. And your Pa can have it when he wants it.
He started toward the door.
I don't know about you, but I could use a little grub. I'll put some more coffee on when I come back.
Later, seated at the kitchen table again, Junior drank his coffee while watching Doc devour chunks of meat sliced from a smoked ham hanging by a hemp cord in a corner of the kitchen. Just making conversation, Doc questioned Roy's son on the happenstance of coming to him for help.
So, you say you had old Buck Avery himself on your tail?
Junior nodded.
Don't too many outlaws shake old Buck once he picks up the scent?
We ain't like most outlaws.
You sure you didn't lead him here? Buck don't know about my place here. He might know about me, but he don't know about this place.
It was the first question Doc had asked when Roy and Junior had shown up at his cabin near the Kiyomishi. But now he sought a little more reassurance.
Well, he ain't showed up, has he? Him and that other deputy weren't that far behind us. If we hadn't lost them, they'd be here by now.
Satisfied, Doc pushed his empty plate aside.
You sure you ain't hungry?
I'm sure.
Yes, sir. It ain't easy to shake old Buck. How'd you lose him?
Paul knows how Buck figures. We didn't lose him till we got to the river. Paul said Buck would be sure we would head straight for Texas. So we swum the horses upstream instead of downstream till we come to a creek that was wide enough to lead the horses up it. We went up that creek for about 300 or 400 yards before we got out of the water. Then we laid up in the woods and waited for them to show up. We figured if they did, they were going to meet up with a shower of lead. They never showed. After a while, with Paul getting worse and worse, we went back down the creek and came on upriver to your place.
Well, you came to the right place. I expect your Paul might have died if he'd have gone much longer with that rotten hand. You're more than welcome here for as long as it takes to get Roy back on his feet.
Doc was well aware of the recent bank robberies in Ataka and McAllister, so he figured there was plenty of money in those saddlebags that Junior kept such a close eye on. and the longer the two of them stayed, the more he could charge for his services. Things did not go so well for the recovering patient during the following 3 days. Roy developed a fever and seemed to go in and out of his conscious mind for long periods of time, and for a while, it looked like he was more likely to die than pull out of it. A worried junior begged Doc to save his pa, telling him that he would be well paid for the job. The fever broke on the fourth day, and Roy, weak and drained, woke up to find Doc and Junior standing over his bed. He startled them when he opened his eyes.
My hand.
Safe and sound. You had me and Junior worried there for a spell, but I believe you by God whipped it. You feel like eating now?
No. Get me some coffee.
While Doc was getting the coffee, Roy looked his son in the eye with some of the old angry spark returning.
Ugh, that son of a bitch. I won't kill him for taking my hand.
Paul, I thought you understood that's what he was gonna do. You'd have died if he didn't.
Buck Avery, damn it! He'll pay for my hand. And that damn other deputy, too. He's the one that shot it off.
Casey Dixon. He's a deputy riding with Avery. Young feller, he's the one that arrested your boy Billy over near Broken Bow. I've been hearing about him a lot here in the nations. From what they say, he's a regular stud horse.
That bit of information was enough to bring Roy's blood to a boil. The old man sat up in bed, and he might have gotten up if Junior had not been there to restrain him.
Take it easy, Pa.
Let me go, damn it!
Junior, out of force of habit, immediately obeyed and released his hold on his father's arm. Roy threw his blanket aside and got to his feet, only to discover he was too weak to stand. He sat back on the bed, his face a rough mosaic of fury, framed by a mass of unkempt, dirty gray hair. He was a menacing sight in spite of his fragile health. Junior, acquainted with his father's frequent storms of rage, stood silently by, waiting for the calm vindictiveness to return. Doc, however, had never witnessed Roy's unbridled rage. He stood speechless, still holding the cup of hot coffee. After a few silent moments passed, Doc set the cup down on the table beside the bed and quickly stepped back in case another thundercloud was building.
Casey Dixon, where's my hand?
I put it in the shed out back where nothing can get to it.
Well, bring it in here.
Roy sank back on the pillow then, having exhausted himself in the process of venting his anger. Fully realizing now how feeble he was, he begrudgingly accepted the fact that he would need time to recover from his amputation and regain his strength.
Junior, we're going home till I can get on my feet again. And then I'm going hunting for two deputy marshals.
Luella Blanton paused to lean on her hoe while she gazed at two moving objects on the far side of the open field on the other side of the creek. Visitors were seldom seen in this remote area of the White Oak Creek, and strangers, never. The two families that did know, who lived in the two cabins close by the banks of the Muddy Creek, never talked about it for fear of deadly reprisal. Luella continued to stare at the two riders, unable to make out their identity at that distance, until they turned into the field and appeared to be heading her way. She dropped her hoe and ran from the garden back toward the cabin.
Ma! Riders coming!
Almost instantly, a thin, frail woman appeared in the open doorway of the larger of the two cabins. Her yellowed gray hair swept away from her face and held by a bandana tied around her head. Though she seemed puny at first glance, a closer observation of the woman revealed a lean strength in sinew and bone, tempered by long years of hard work and hard times. Cora Blanton looked beyond her 14-year-old daughter toward the two riders approaching.
Get in the house and stay there.
Cora went to the corner of the stone fireplace to fetch the rifle prop there. Unemotional over the prospect of strangers calling on her, she stood waiting just inside the door, rifle in hand. She felt no sense of alarm. The years had left her far too tired to be fearful about much of anything. With the two riders almost to the garden now, a small spark in her nearly exhausted reserve of emotion caused her to prop her rifle against the door frame as she recognized her husband and eldest son. Weary relief instead of a sense of joy descended upon her, followed by a sudden feeling of concern for the three sons who were missing. She walked to the edge of the porch and waited while Roy and Junior guided their horses a few dozen yards upstream to the shallow forge.
Howdy, Ma.
Junior dismounted in front of the porch.
I didn't look for you to be back this soon. Where's your brothers?
It was only then that she spied the bloody bandage on the stump of her husband's arm.
Oh, my Lord in heaven.
Pa! What happened?
Luella ran from the cabin and saw her brother steadying her father as he climbed down from his horse.
I'm gonna need some healing.
Roy stepped up on the porch and went directly inside.
Where's my boys?
Receiving no response, she turned back to Junior, who was holding the horse's reins.
Where's your brothers?
They're dead, Ma. All three shot down by marshals.
Oh, my God!
Although the shock registered in her weathered features, she had learned that oral lament brought no results, and her tears had dried up many years before. This was a day that she had known would come, had been bound to come, considering her husband's violent occupation.
Put the horses away and come in the house. I'll fix you something to eat.
She turned and followed her husband into the cabin, walking past her grief-stricken daughter.
I'm hungry.
Roy pointed toward a large gray metal coffee pot on the edge of the stove.
Any coffee in that pot?
Some. Been sitting there since breakfast.
She poured a cup and set it on the table before him.
What happened to my boys?
Don't go looking at me with that evil eye. Buck Avery and Casey Dixon, that's what happened to them. Put your damn evil eye on them. They're dead men. As soon as I get my strength back and my arm heals up.
Cora lowered her gaze, thinking about her sons, Buster, Zeke, and Billy. She would grieve for them alone when she was in her bed tonight. She paused to look at the blood-soaked cloths wrapped around the stump where his hand used to be.
I'll need to put on some fresh bandages.
Luella walked in the cabin, still grief-stricken.
Luella, slice some of that side meat and put it on the stove. And stop that blubbering. It ain't gonna bring your brothers back.
Yes, Ma.
Oh, this stuff is rank. Luella, put on some decent coffee.
I told you it'd been on the stove since breakfast.
Breakfast today or yesterday?
Accustomed to his ill humor and complaints, she ignored the remark.
Anybody been poking around since we've been gone?
Nary a soul.
Junior entered the cabin and dropped the saddlebags by the door.
I smell something cooking. I could eat the south end out of a northbound mule right now.
Cora turned to Luella.
Luella, take them saddlebags into the other room.
Luella took the bags into the bedroom and quickly returned.
That meat or whatever it is in your saddlebag smells like it's turning rank.
Junior gave his father a quick look.
Don't bother anything in them bags.
Junior gave Luella a quick glance as well that told her not to pursue the issue. Charity McDonald pulled a chair away from the long table by the window so she could sweep a little pile of dried mud left by one of the supper customers. There'd been an unusually large crowd for a Wednesday night, and she was feeling a bit weary. It was still a good 2 hours until dark. That was the time when her father usually closed for the day. A few hungry strays might come in looking for something to eat, but she would routinely serve them at the counter so that she could go ahead and set the tables for breakfast. With little more than a half-hearted effort, she pushed the chair back under the table. Then she paused to glance out the window when someone in the street caught her eye. She quickly scolded herself for the slight skip in her heartbeat when she recognized the rugged form of Casey Dixon riding beside the imposing bulk of Buck Avery. The two deputy marshals walked their horses up the middle of the street. Behind them, three horses trailed, one with packs and two saddled, but no riders. Confident that she could not be seen at the edge of the window, she watched as they passed by the cook's corner, waiting to see if Casey looked her way. Glancing neither right nor left, he rode easily in the saddle, his focus evidently on the stables near the courthouse.
Damn you, Casey Dixon. You just keep looking straight ahead. You're gonna look this way, I know you are.
The two lawmen were even with the door when Casey suddenly looked at the entrance for a long moment before turning away again. She smiled. Suddenly, she was not weary anymore. She glanced at the clock on the wall behind the counter. 2 good hours till dark.
Honey? I hope for your sake you're not thinking any romantic thoughts about that deputy.
She turned around to find her father standing there, his arms folded across his chest, his face wearing a stern reprimand.
He's a nice enough young fella, I don't deny that. But a man like that doesn't have much of a future. One day he'd leave you widowed and crying, maybe with 2 or 3 youngins to look after. Oh, it would be a hard life, I'm afraid. For goodness sake, Charity, be smart. Think about your possibility for a good life with someone like Jared Ashton. Your life hasn't been as easy as most girls since your mother died, and you having to help me in the diner and all. With a man like Jared, you won't have to work like a hired hand all your life. You owe it to yourself not to make a foolish decision now.
Charity flushed scarlet. Her father had hinted a few times lately, but this was the first time he'd made an earnest appeal to her senses.
Casey and I are just friends, Daddy. You worry too much about me. I'm not planning to marry anybody anytime soon.
Jared offers you a future. I'm sure Casey Dixon is a fine young man, and it ain't right to let him think he's got a chance when you know he hasn't.
By the time Buck and Casey had unsaddled the horses, turned them loose in the corral, and turned in Zeke's and Buster's personal effects, it was getting along toward dark. John Council had already gone home, so they'd have to wait until morning to make their reports.
Might as well call it a night ourselves. Come on over to the Deuce of Spades with me, and I'll buy you supper.
Nah, I reckon I'll just go on back to my room.
Well, if you change your mind, you know where I'll be.
I'll see you in the morning at John Council's office.
Casey thought about the reason he had turned down Buck's invitation. Charity McDonald. It would be a little while yet before the diner usually closed, and he preferred to stop by when there were only a few customers left, and Charity had more time to visit. When he and Buck rode by, he almost thought he got a glimpse out of the corner of his eye of someone standing by one of the windows. Gazing out the window now, Charity McDonald was surprised by the unexpected appearance of Jared Ashton driving a horse and buggy. He pulled up in front of the diner and walked in the door, holding a bouquet of wild flowers.
I thought I'd stop by and give you a ride home.
Astonished, Charity looked from Jared to her father, who was beaming just as wide as the dashing attorney was.
Well, that's mighty grand of you, but I'll be a little while yet. We haven't closed.
Oh, go on. Mary and I can close up.
Well, I guess I can go then.
She took the flowers he held out to her.
I'll just take these home and put them in some water.
She took off her apron and handed it to Mary, the Choctaw girl who worked in the kitchen. Charity had to admit, Jared was devilishly handsome, and her instincts told her he had something on his mind in addition to a ride home. She was sure that he'd been getting around to it for the past 2 weeks. Casey stepped inside the cook's corner, dropped his saddlebags by the door, and propped his rifle against the wall. He looked around the empty dining room for Charity. Fred McDonald glanced up from behind the counter when he heard the door open.
Can I help you?
Am I too late to get something to eat?
No, you can get something if you settle for bacon and eggs, or something we can fix real quick. We're getting ready to close.
Well, bacon and eggs sounds good. I don't want to put you out any. I got in kind of late, or I would have been here earlier.
Fred McDonald took a long look at the young deputy. Lean, muscled, tousled hair with a week's growth of whiskers. He looked tired and hungry. McDonald's heart softened a little.
Sit down here at the counter. We haven't emptied the coffee pot yet. I'll get you a cup while Mary scrambles some eggs for you.
Much obliged. I'd be looking at a couple of strips of jerky for supper if I was too late to eat here.
While he waited for his supper, he glanced around the room several times, hoping to find the Charity was there. McDonald watched him from the kitchen. There was an honest strength about that young man that outshined his humble manner. McDonald decided he could genuinely like the man, if he wasn't certain he had an interest in his daughter. When the eggs and bacon were done, he took the plate from Mary and placed it on the counter before Casey. Then he poured himself a cup of coffee and sat down on the stool next to him.
You just missed Charity by a little bit. Jared Ashton picked her up in his buggy.
He watched closely for some reaction to that news. There was no outward sign of any kind from Casey, although the comment registered deep within.
She'll be sorry she missed you. She says she likes to talk to you. Charity likes to talk to a lot of people. That's just Charity's way.
Yes, sir. Your daughter's a nice lady. I enjoy talking to her, too.
Casey was not slow in picking up the intent of McDonald's casual conversation. He admitted to himself that if the roles were reversed, he himself might seek to discourage a dirt-poor lawman from taking a serious interest in his daughter. He didn't linger over his meal. Casey didn't notice the person sitting in the dark corner of the rooming house porch until he heard her voice as he climbed the front steps.
Back in town, are you?
Casey looked then to find Ethel Ford sitting on the swing, holding a cup of coffee.
Evening, Miss Ford. Yes, ma'am, I just got back a little while ago. I didn't see you sitting out here in the dark.
I like to sit out here and have some coffee in the evenings. Get so stuffy in the house this time of year. You want some coffee?
No, thank you, ma'am. I just came from supper.
Even in the darkness, she could sense his weary mood. And from her many years of marriage to a deputy marshal, she understood the strain of endless, lonesome, and often dangerous trails.
Why don't you sit down and visit a while? Keep an old lady company for a bit.
He pulled a rocking chair over closer to the swing.
Why, thank you, ma'am. That would be nice.
Ethel Ford was a sensitive woman and clever in her intuition when it came to recognizing troubled young men. A few minutes' conversation told her that the rigors of the job were not the thing weighing heavily upon Casey's mind. That being the case, she felt confident that the problem was most likely female-related.
You know, you're a fine-looking young man, and from what I can see, a hard-working man. I'd say it's about time you thought about finding a young lady and maybe starting a family.
Well, to tell you the truth, I've been thinking about that very thing.
Good for you. And I'll bet you already got someone in mind.
Well, I reckon I have. But I'm not sure she's thinking about the same thing I am.
There's only one way to find out for sure. I didn't even know I wanted to get married until Edgar Ford popped a question out of the blue one day. We got married 2 weeks later.
I don't know if I got enough sand to come right out and ask. I ain't sure how she feels, but I'm pretty sure her pa ain't too crazy about the idea.
You must have some kind of notion, otherwise you wouldn't have even thought about her. Who is she?
No, fine.
Oh, for pity's sake, what's her name? I'm not gonna tell anybody.
Charity McDonald.
I should have guessed. She's a handsome woman, all right, and a nicer girl I've never met. You two would make a fine couple. Have you told her how you feel about her?
No, ma'am.
Well, what are you waiting for? You get yourself cleaned up in the morning, shave that scrub off your face, and put on some clean clothes. You do have some clean clothes, don't
you? He nodded.
Well, put them on, and you go see her first thing. She's probably wondering if you're ever going to get up your nerve.
I've got to report in first thing in the morning.
Well, go after that. If you come home tomorrow night without telling Charity what's in your heart, I swear I'll break a broom over your back and then I'll go tell her myself.
Casey was overcome by a feeling of complete alarm. He couldn't think of an answer for Ethel, so he simply got to his feet.
I expect I best go to bed now.
You remember what I said?
Yes, ma'am.
It had not been a question of whether or not Casey gave it more thought as he lay on the straw tick that served as his mattress that night. To the contrary, he had thought of nothing else. His anguish had kept him awake until the wee hours when exhaustion finally took over and let him sleep the remainder of the night. When he stepped out onto the back porch that connected the washroom to the kitchen the next morning, there waiting for him was Ethel Ford, hands on her hips and fixing him with an accusing gaze.
Do you remember what I said last night?
Blushing, Casey nodded.
I meant it.
She stood aside to let him pass.
If you don't, I'll tell her myself.
Oh, Lord.
It was one thoroughly chastised young deputy who walked into John Council's office that morning. Buck was already there, seated in the overstuffed chair as he had been on that first day.
Damn, John, look at that. You didn't tell me we were supposed to get all gussied up this morning.
I was about due.
Maybe that ought to be the standard for deputies around here.
I reckon that assures hell me my retirement.
With the japing of the freshly scrubbed deputy over now, Council got down to business.
I was hoping you boys would be lucky enough to bring old man Blanton in, but I reckon you did the best you could. I telegraphed the Texas Rangers that you'd managed to cut the Blanton gang down to the old man and one son, and they were most likely headed back down that way.
I'm pretty sure they're back in Texas. We made it plenty hot for them here, even if we didn't get all of them. Roy's wounded, we ain't sure how bad, but Casey shot him, and they was hightailing it straight to the Red River.
Well, we'll let Texas worry about him for a while. I want you both to write your report on the job. Then I expect you could use a little time off. I don't have anything that can't wait, so go fishing or something.
You're the boss.
Buck grinned at Casey. Casey nodded his agreement, thinking that he might have plans of a personal nature that could take advantage of a little time off. With nothing more to discuss, the two deputies went to a long table to write their reports. It did take a while, since Council demanded details when it came to substantiating requests for the reimbursement of expenses, but it was still fairly early when the reports were completed. Casey had not yet eaten breakfast. His intention was to take care of that right now.
Hey, how about you join me at the Deuce of Spades for a little morning drink? It's on me.
Not this morning. Got some things to attend to.
Suspicious, Buck took a step back, cocked his head to one side, squinted hard at Casey.
You got a woman on your mind. You always like to eat at Fred McDonald's place. Have you been sparking that McDonald gal? That's the reason you got all duded up this morning. I should have known you was up to something.
Buck slapped himself on the thigh.
That whole time we was riding together, you never let on you had somebody you was thinking about back here in Fort Smith.
It wasn't anybody's business.
You're right about that. I'll see you later on. If you need any help with that little gal, I'll be hanging around the Deuce of Spades most of the time. Oh, good hunting, partner.
Fred McDonald glanced up from behind the counter when Casey walked in the door. He could not help but notice the change in the young deputy's appearance from that of the night before, and it didn't take much thought to guess why.
Good morning. What can we do for you? It's a little early yet for dinner.
Morning. I ain't had breakfast yet. Reckon I could get some more of those eggs and bacon?
Well, yes, sir, you sure can. Have a seat.
With a wave of his hand, he indicated any of the vacant tables. Casey couldn't help but notice an overly cordial welcome from Charity's father this morning. It served to create a spark of confidence for the mission he'd set for himself.
Yeah.
He chose a table near the window and sat down while McDonald disappeared into the kitchen. In a few minutes, Charity came from the kitchen with a steaming cup of coffee. Smiling brightly, she glided over to his table and placed the cup down before him.
As soon as Daddy told me you were out here, I knew you'd want this.
Yep, this is the best coffee in town.
He wanted to tell her why he'd really come, that he had something he had to tell her that was burning his insides wanting to get out. But he couldn't bring himself to speak of his feelings for her just yet. She pulled a chair back from the table and sat down.
You've been gone quite a while. Daddy told me you stopped in last night. I left early. I'm sorry I missed you.
I'm sorry I missed you too.
When she continued to smile at him, he decided that he might as well empty his magazine and get it all out on the table.
But there was something I wanted to tell you.
He had no sooner uttered the words when he felt a cold hand clamp down on his insides. For when she crossed her hands on the table, he noticed the ring on her finger. While she waited for him to continue, he paused and hesitated.
Is that a new ring there? I never noticed it before.
Yes.
She held it out for him to admire.
This is the reason I left early. Jared Ashton asked me to marry him last night, and I said yes. He's been beating around the bush for 6 months, and last night he popped the question. We haven't set the date yet, but it'll be sometime soon. Maybe you can come to the wedding?
Beyond being stunned, he felt as if he'd just been gutted. He wondered later if she'd not been puzzled by the look of shock that must surely have been in his eyes. He was barely able to find words that made any sense.
I think I'm gonna be out of town for a long spell.
Oh. Well, what was it you wanted to tell me?
I must have forgot it.
While she gazed quizzically at his sudden awkwardness, he tried to hide the devastation he felt in his heart.
Yeah, it wasn't anything important.
He was saved for the moment when Mary brought his breakfast, allowing him to try to recover his composure. He automatically picked up the salt. As he looked down at the plate, his mind was trapped in a whirlpool of disillusionment, so intense that the bacon and eggs were no more than a blur.
Casey?
Huh?
You're not going to be able to eat those eggs if you keep shaking salt on them.
What?
I said you're not going to be able to eat those eggs if you keep pouring salt on them.
The realization of the cause of his abrupt change suddenly dawned on her. The news of her engagement had seriously affected him.
Oh. Yeah, I'm not really hungry anyway. Coffee's all I wanted. Yeah, I've got to get going. How much do I owe you for the eggs?
Many times she'd been convinced that the soft-spoken, easy-going deputy had more serious thoughts about her, hidden behind the casual flirting they had indulged in. Now that thought was confirmed when she read the disappointment in his face.
Casey, nothing. There's no charge.
Eager to leave, he stood up.
I'm sorry I put everybody in so much trouble. I'd be glad to pay.
When she shook her head, he immediately turned and started toward the door, realizing that he was reacting badly. He turned to face her again.
No, I forgot to congratulate you. I'm sure Jared Ashton is a good man. My best to you both.
He left then, without giving her a chance to reply.
Thank you.
Charity stood there for a moment, staring at the door, wondering how her life would have been if Casey had proposed instead of Jared. Then she reminded herself that she had spent her young life cleaning and waiting tables, and that was enough. Casey Dixon was attractive in an untamed way, but she could not abide the idea of living like a squaw in a mountain shack somewhere. She turned then to find her father peering at her from behind the counter. He quickly averted his gaze and pretended to be drying a glass.
What a goddamn fool.
Casey stalked up the dusty street toward the courthouse, oblivious to people he passed along the way.
Damn old Ethel Ford, damn nosy old bitch. She pushed me into doing that.
He immediately regretted the thought, knowing that his compassionate landlady had only his best interests at heart.
Ain't nobody to blame but me. Of course she's gonna pick a lawyer over a saddled tramp. I need to get my head on straight, my mind back on what I do best.
With that, he headed straight for John Council's office, feeling a sudden, strong desire to get the hell out of town. The marshal looked up from his desk, surprised to see the young deputy so soon.
What's up, Casey? I thought you and Buck would be dead drunk by now.
No, sir. I've been doing some thinking about Roy Blanton and his son, and I'd like to go back to the Choctaw Nation to check on a few places.
Is that a fact? I thought you and Buck were pretty sure Blanton gone back to Texas.
Well, Buck is, but I ain't so sure. You know, I picked up Billy Blanton down near Broken Bow, and the folks down there told me Billy was raising hell around there for a week. I'm thinking the Blantons must have a hideout near there. Hell, we know they got a place they always go to in Indian Territory, and most likely Billy was staying there. And I figure it'd be a good idea to find out if Roy went there to heal up instead of heading back to Texas.
It was an interesting idea. Council gave it some consideration.
You might be right. It couldn't hurt, but hell, you and Buck just got back. Maybe I ought to send somebody else.
I wasn't thinking about Buck going with me. I work just as well alone, and there ain't no reason to send two. We've come a long way on this case, and I'd like to finish it up. I don't need any time off. I'd rather be working. I've got a fair notion that Blanton has a place somewhere over in that country where the Mountain Fork River joins up with the Little River. I might be able to stumble across it.
He didn't think it wise to tell Council that he intended to go into Texas territory if he had to. Council studied his deputy for a few moments, noting the intense look on his face. Casey was a good man with a good head on his shoulders. If he had reason to believe he had a fair chance of running Roy Blanton to ground, then Council was inclined to okay it.
All right, go ahead. But Casey, you watch yourself. A wounded Roy Blanton might be more dangerous than the one that ain't.
Yes, sir. I'll be out of here by this afternoon, just as soon as I can draw some ammunition and supplies.
On a hot, dry morning in early August, shortly after arriving home, Roy Blanton and his one remaining son rode slowly past the stores and saloons of Sulphur Springs, Texas. There was no fear of recognition for the two notorious outlaws, because Roy always made it a point not to raid, rob, or kill close to home. Still, both men carefully scanned the weathered buildings they passed from long-established habits and the awareness that the Texas Rangers were still looking for them. In fact, this was only the second time either of the two had even been to town. Roy's wife, Cora, and his daughter would have made the trip all the way from White Oak Creek if there was a need to go that far for supplies. This was an errand, however, that only Roy could do. Seeing a man leaning up against the front of the saloon, Roy pulled the big gray gelding he rode over close to the boardwalk.
I hear there's a doctor in this town.
Sure is. Doc Davis. Keep on the way you're heading. Go past the dry goods store about 100 yards. Little house on the right, sitting between two big oak trees.
Much obliged.
Roy rode on. Left staring after the two strangers, the man went back inside the saloon. Walking up to the bar, he spoke to the bartender.
There's a couple of fellers out there looking for Doc Davis, and one of them looks like he might have had a hand chopped off.
That a fact? Who was it?
Never seen him before.
That was the end of the matter until later in the morning, when Jim White walked into the saloon. Junior stepped up on the porch and knocked on the door. In a few minutes, a matronly woman came to the door. She paused to take a cursory look at the rough stranger at the door before peering around him to look at his companion.
Yes?
My paw's bad hurt. Needs to see the doctor.
She took a closer look at Roy, still seated in the saddle, and then she saw the bloody stump.
Oh, good heavens. Bring him on inside.
She stood holding the door while the two men walked past her. Then she directed him to an examining room off the living room and left to fetch her husband.
Good God, man. What happened to your arm?
Got my head in the wrong place, cutting some timber.
Well, let's have a look.
Davis started unwrapping the bulky bandage.
Damn, who did this?
There weren't no doctor there at the time.
Davis puzzled over Doc Garvey's pad on the injured limb for a long moment.
What the hell is this?
Fellow that put it there says it was a piece of hog fat. Said it was good for padding.
It's good for infection and maybe blood poisoning. It's a good thing you didn't wait any longer before coming in. You might have lost your whole arm. I'm gonna have to take that mess off and clean that stump up some. We'll just have to see what happens after that. It might heal up all right, it might not, but I'll do what I can.
He looked Roy in the eyes.
Look, this is going to be painful.
It's been painful. A little more won't hurt any worse.
I'll give you something that'll help a little, but nothing's going to take away all the pain. Get on that table over there and we'll get started.
While Dr. Davis was attempting to undo Doc Garvey's handiwork, Texas Ranger Jim White walked into the Sulphur Saloon and approached the bar.
Morning.
Walker, the owner, greeted him.
I see you're still around this morning.
Yep, I'm on my way back to Dallas as soon as I whip my whistle.
All coming up now. You were asking about seeing any strangers around town? There was a couple of fellers come in looking for Dr. Davis this morning. Jack Thompson told them where Doc's house was. Said one of them had a bad arm wound. Jack's still here, over by the table, watching the card game. Hey, Jack, come here.
What?
You talked to a couple of strangers this morning?
I did.
What they looked like?
Well, there was a couple of rough-looking fellers, is all I can tell you. One of them was a good bit older than the other, and the old one had one hell of a bad arm. Almost looked like there weren't no hand on the end of it.
The ranger took a paper from his pocket, unfolded it, and held it before Jack.
One of them look anything like this?
Jack studied the artist's sketch for a moment.
Yeah, I think he did. The old one, a little bit anyway.
How long ago was that?
It was about an hour ago. Likely they're still at the doc's house.
It was definitely worth investigating. The ranger station in Dallas had been notified by the U.S. Marshal in Fort Worth that the notorious outlaw Roy Blanton had been wounded in the arm in a shootout with two deputies. Two of his sons were killed, and one son escaped with the old man. They were believed to be heading for Texas. Looked like this was White's lucky day.
Well, it doesn't look as bad as I thought it would.
Dr. Davis had removed the stitches that held the hog fat pad in place. Puffy little holes left from the stitching looked more prone to infection than the cauterized stump. He applied a solution of 1 in 20 carbolic acid liberally to the wounds, as well as the bandages, to keep down the infection.
Yeah, that'll probably heal in a few days. I'm going to wrap the stump with a new bandage, and if you keep it pretty clean, I think it'll heal up proper. You need to come back and let me take a look at it in a week or so. It's still gonna pain you some, but it ought to get better day by day.
He went over to the cupboard and got a bottle of laudanum off the shelf.
Here, you can take a swig of this whenever you need it. It'll help with the pain.
Roy swung his legs over the edge of the table and stood up. He pulled his shirt on.
Junior, pay him whatever he wants. My arm feels better already.
Although the doctor knew that was highly unlikely, the feeling that his arm was now receiving proper treatment was enough to make it so in Roy's mind. He felt ready now to head back to Indian Territory to settle his debt with the two deputies who had caused him this grief. Particularly pleased to be paid for his services in cash instead of promises or produce, Dr. Davis escorted his patient and his son to the door. He failed to notice the stranger waiting beside the horses at the hitching rail.
Morning!
Roy and Junior paused on the porch steps, surprised by the ranger's sudden appearance and noticing the badge on his shirt. Neither man returned the greeting to Jim White.
This is a fine-looking horse you're riding. Damn near white. You don't see many grays that look this white.
It matched the description of the horse Roy Blanton was last seen riding. White stepped away from the gelding.
You fellas just passing through town?
Yeah, that's right. We're just passing through.
Roy stepped down from the bottom step and stood on the path.
What happened to your hand?
White moved over to directly face Roy, his hand resting casually on the butt of his pistol.
I heard it cutting timber.
Is that a fact? Well, I bet it hurt like hell. Is this your son?
He nodded toward Junior, still on the steps.
Mister, you ask a hell of a lot of questions.
Well, now that's my job. You know, it's a funny thing. I got a sketch of an old son of a bitch named Roy Blanton last week. Reminds me of you. Long gray hair hanging out from under a flat-crowned hat. Big old bushy gray mustache. Damnest thing, he rides a horse just like this one here. Got shot in the arm in a shootout, but him and one of his sons got away. What'd you say about that?
White's face registered complete shock from the slug that smashed into his breastbone. He backed up a couple of steps and tried to pull his revolver. Junior fired again, this time splitting the ranger's forehead. The front door opened. Dr. Davis stood in the doorway. A quick look at the body lying on his path. Another a Junior, now turning to look at him, and the door was immediately slammed shut. Junior grinned, amused by the doctor's fright.
I don't know if he wants to see you in a couple weeks or not, like you said. I wasn't aiming to come back anyway. Let's get...
One thing Roy knew for certain now was that there was going to be a hell of a lot more rangers in this part of Texas very soon. It made up his mind to leave for Oklahoma Territory a day or two sooner than he had planned. He paused briefly to look down at the ranger.
If you was aiming at that badge, you sure as hell missed it.
I wasn't aiming at his star. I was aiming for the center of his chest, right where I got him. I aimed that second shot right between his eyes, and I got it right on the money, too.
Yeah, I reckon, but if you'd have missed, you could have shot one of the horses.
Holding the horses back to a walk to avoid suspicion, they rode back along the main street where several people had come out of the buildings having heard the gunshots. Passing the saloon, Roy recognized Jack Thompson as the man he had asked about the doctor on their way in, so he pulled his horse over close to the boardwalk as before.
Is there any law in this town?
No full-time law, but there's a ranger in town. He just went up to Doc Davis's place. He was looking for you fellers.
It fell out of his mouth before he thought about what he was saying. He immediately backed away, realizing that he may have said way too much. Roy just grinned.
Yeah, we saw him. He's still up there. Yeah.
Roy headed out of town, looking back to grin defiantly at Thompson.
When you reckon you'll be back?
Cora Blanton didn't really care as long as Roy left her a little money for coffee and flour and such. If the truth be told, her life was a great deal more pleasant when the men were away, leaving her and Luella to take care of the place. She did kind of miss the younger boys. Junior was so much like the old man that it was like having two of the same person around, and both ill-tempered.
Hell, I don't know. When I finish up with what I got to do, there's going to be a little trouble stirred up over that Ranger Junior shot in Sulphur Springs. I don't know if they'll be snooping around this far from there or not, but even if they do, this place ain't that easy to find.
I know what to do if they show up. Tell them I ain't never heard of anybody named Blanton.
There were many times when she wished it were true.
I'll be going then.
Roy stepped up in the saddle, holding his stump up in the air while he mounted.
Let's go, Junior.
His son picked up the lead rope for the pack horse. Roy reached behind him and took out his severed hand. Carefully unwrapping the oilcloth, he frowned as he peered at the rotting appendage before wrapping it once again and returning it to his saddlebag. Without another word of parting for his wife and daughter, he started out along the creek bank.
God damn this stuff!
The empty laudanum bottle smashed against a rock.
Don't do nothing to ease the pain, nohow.
Following silently along behind Roy, Junior was beginning to worry about his father. The old man seemed to be getting more and more belligerent ever since they had crossed the Red River, causing Junior to watch him closely. When they camped at night, Roy would invariably withdraw to his bed and sit staring at the healing stump of his arm. And when he thought Junior wasn't watching, he would pull the grisly hand from his saddlebag and hold it up against the stump as if willing it to reattach itself. That was an unnerving sight for Junior, causing him to wonder if the old man was beginning to lose his mind. Now making their way up through the Ouachita Mountains, they were almost to their hideout. Junior hoped his paw might be a little more at ease after reaching the cabin. Maybe the pain of the healing arm might lessen to some degree if he would take a little time to rest up before continuing.
What the hell?
Roy stared down the ridge that shielded the cabin and spotted smoke coming from the chimney.
By God, looks like we got us some termites living in our house.
Roy was never far from rage, and the prospect of drifters taking up quarters in the cabin he had built served to sufficiently fuel his anger.
Come on!
Leonard, we got company.
William Bowden stood by the front door, staring at the two riders just reaching the bottom of the ridge and following the stream toward the cabin. William picked up his rifle and went to the door to stand behind his brother. After studying the two strangers for a few moments, he turned to his wife, who was tending a rabbit roasting on a spit over the fireplace.
Bonnie, you stay back out of sight until we see who they are.
When the riders pulled to a stop at the edge of the tiny clearing around the house, the two brothers stepped outside the door to meet them.
Howdy!
Leonard looked up into the grave faces of the stranger.
Howdy yourself.
Roy narrowed his eyes to take in the scene, and he made special note of the one standing close to the door with his hand hanging just inside the jamb.
We've been gone for a little spell. It was mighty kind of you boys to look after our cabin while we was away. Now I reckon you can clear out now that we're back.
Leonard glanced back at his brother, seeking confirmation of his own feelings on the matter. William slowly shook his head in reply, confident that he and his brother were of the same opinion.
Well now, that's right interesting. But we found this cabin abandoned, and there ain't been nobody come to claim it for over a month. So I reckon we look at it as being ours to claim.
Well now, that is interesting.
Roy turned to Junior.
Ain't that interesting, son?
Junior nodded and grinned.
Well, seeing as how we got back a little too late, you wouldn't mind if we watered our horses, would you?
Help yourself. Water's free.
Much obliged.
Roy stepped down from his horse.
How'd you fellas find this place? Ain't many folks know where this cabin is.
I reckon we wouldn't have found it if one of our horses hadn't got loose and run off when we was camped down near the river.
Yes, sir. She's hard to find, all right.
Roy glanced at Junior, and with a curt nod, indicated William. Without hesitation, Junior pulled his pistol and shot William standing in the door. Leonard fell with a bullet in his chest from Roy's handgun.
Go see if there's anyone else inside.
Don't see no sign of anybody else. But supper's ready. Roasted rabbit. And if we'd waited a minute or two longer, it'd have been burned.
Roy walked in and started looking around.
I reckon it was just the two of them. There ain't but two horses out there.
What Roy and Junior didn't know was that Bonnie Bowden, petrified with no time to think about taking a thing with her, had climbed out the kitchen window and slipped away quickly and quietly up through the forest that covered the side of the ridge.
We're going hunting in the morning. I need something more than a damn rabbit to strengthen my blood. Then we'll see. I don't figure on laying around here long.
What are you planning on doing, Pa?
What do you mean, what am I planning to do? What I said I was aiming to do. I'm going to kill them two deputies, learn them and all the other lawmen that they're going to pay for it when they come after Roy Blanton.
How will you find them?
We'll find them. If they're in this territory, we'll find them. By God, I'll ride into Fort Smith and shoot them down right under Judge Parker's nose if I have to. Don't nobody kill my boys and get away with it.
Thinking John Council's advice to take a week or two off a very good suggestion, Buck decided he would take the time to visit his cabin on the Kiamishi River. It had been a while since he'd been there, and it would give him a chance to do some work on the cabin. There were some things he needed, and he was now $500 richer thanks to Roy Blanton's moment of generosity. The thought of that caused a frown to appear on his face as he realized the irony of it. He was fixed for the rest of his life with a fine house on the Kiamishi and half interest in the Deuce of Spades, and all thanks to his deal with the devil in the form of Roy Blanton, the most notorious outlaw in the territory. Many times since then, his conscience had nagged him over his failure to resist temptation. And he had attempted to justify his crime by telling himself that the court owed it to him for all the outlaws he had captured or killed over his long years of service to the territory. Now, with the return to the nations of Roy Blanton, his one moment of weakness had come back to haunt him. As far as the $500 he had just accepted, he figured he might as well have taken it. It was all just part of one sin. One thing he was certain about, however, it would ruin him if he were found out. He had no family left. The only thing he had that mattered was his reputation as an honest lawman. And it had been touch and go for a while there with Casey Dixon's determination to capture Roy and the boys. It bothered him considerably that he couldn't play it straight with Casey, for he genuinely liked the young man. Buck felt greatly relieved by the knowledge that Blanton had once again slipped out of the nations. Ready to leave Fort Smith, he decided to drop by Council's office on the way out of town to have a cup of coffee with his old friend. The marshal always had a pot of coffee working on the little pot-bellied stove in his office.
I'm headed out to my place on the river. Do some work on the place. God knows there's plenty to do. Maybe do a little fishing.
Damn if I don't envy you. If things keep up the way they've been going around here, I may take off and join you. You know, Buck, I'd be interested to know what you think of your young partner after riding with him. I know what I think about him, but I ain't ever rode with him in the field.
Well, John, me and you have known each other for a long time. You know I've always liked to work alone. But if I got a partner with somebody, I couldn't find nobody better than Casey Dixon. He ain't got no bad habits that I could see. I don't see him being afraid of nothing. He's quick to back up his partner. You got yourself a damn good deputy there.
I'm glad to hear you say that. It confirms my opinion of the man. He reminds me a lot of you when you were just getting started in this business. He's not one to take it easy, even when he's told to. I'll say that for him.
What do you mean?
I figured you knew. Hell, he's on his way back to the Choctaw Nation. Said he's sure Roy Blanton has a hideout over near Broken Bow somewhere.
He what? He never said nothing to me about going back over there without me. Hell, I told him Blanton's gone back to Texas.
Maybe he's like you, likes to go it alone. Maybe he figures you're so old you need a little rest.
Yeah. Maybe.
Buck got to his feet.
I best be going. I got a lot to do.
He placed his cup on the table beside the stove.
All right, Buck. Good luck with your fishing.
Buck paused to consider what Council had just told him. That young panther was just going to keep on until he got his ass in a crack for sure. He had no choice in what he had to do, thanks to Casey's bulldog determination. His saddlebags were already packed with supplies and ammunition, but his fishing trip to his cabin was just going to have to wait. He stepped up in the saddle and headed toward Broken Bow.